You're listening to Second Stories, created and produced by Second Story with me, Abigail Brocker, as your host. Second Story is a nonprofit based in Northern Virginia, working to provide safe havens and opportunities to grow and thrive to youth in crisis and their families. We help homeless youth and youth in crisis step away from their first story, one often marked by abuse, hardship, and crisis, and write their own second story, full of hope and promise. We are thrilled to bring you season 2 of our podcast. We produced season 1 with high hopes and the conviction that each story was worth telling, and we were so thankful for your responses. You, alongside us, were inspired by each person's honesty and galvanized by their experiences. Your feedback touched us and each of the interviewees. We always hoped to tell more stories, and we're really excited to do that in this new season. This is Second Stories, season 2.
That was the first time that he physically hit me when I was pregnant. I was so heartbroken. Someone who I thought loved me and cared for me will never hurt me.
There are a whole lot of systems and beliefs that many of us have had the luxury of taking for granted. The hope that our parents will nurture us and love us. The idea that if we call the police when we feel unsafe, they will come to our rescue. The assumption that there will be a village to help support us and our children. The hope that the people who claim to love us really do and will act like it even when, especially when, things get hard. A lucky few of us walk through our whole lives having these preconceived notions fulfilled. Bree, though, saw all of these things she thought she could count on, fall away one by one until she was desperate and lonely and afraid. But through it all, Bree was brave enough to focus on the future she dreamt of rather than the present that betrayed her. This is a story marred with heartbreak, yes, but it's more so a story of how a young woman, in the midst of hardship, chose to keep going, full of tenacity and hope. Bree, hi. Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate your time, and I'm really looking forward to hearing more about your story.
Well, thank you for the opportunity for me to share my story. I'm happy to be here.
Good. Thank you. You moved here when you were 14 from South Africa. What was that like, moving from such a foreign place?
It was very tough. We had no choice. We were just children at the age. My mom was getting transferred to the headquarters in D.C. So I moved here in September. It was right around the time winter season is starting. So that just adds to the sadness. It was super depressing and just very different from what I'm used to in South Africa. The culture is different, the school system. And I left most of my family at home. Like I said, it was just me and my brother. The living situation with my mom, she was a single parent. I think we were all very under a lot of stress. And in fact, my brother, he became so depressed, he tried taking his own life. Mm-hmm. And was unsuccessful. Yeah. He has struggled with drug abuse and alcohol abuse. Just being in that living environment, coming home every day and my mother is yelling or shouting at us and just telling us that her life would be different if it wasn't for us. She would be able to travel and do certain things. Just made me feel unloved or devalued. The culture was just very different in school. High school is very tough. Children can be very mean at times, especially because I'm different. Getting picked on in school as well was just awful. I just felt like I was always being beat down.
Yeah, and it sounds like you were very isolated as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
So things sort of changed when you met this guy at a metro station, right? Can you tell us about that?
After high school, I got a job. I was working at a Cold Stone Creamery, and I was on my way to work. I took the public metro, and that's where I met Marcel. And turns out he also worked at the mall, so we saw each other frequently, and he took me out on a date, and shortly afterwards, we became a couple. And I just missed a lot of things that I would know now are red signs. For instance, if we would have any conflicts, he would get very, very upset. He would punch walls, he'd shout and scream. He just became very irate. He also had a problem with lying, just telling really ridiculous stories, which were just unbelievable. I wasn't sure why he would do that. But I knew that he had a really difficult situation at home with his parents. I know that he felt really unloved as well. His mother was abusive, and there was a lot of alcohol abuse. And I just felt like I could help him, that if I stayed with him and showed him love, that he would see a different way and change.
I mean, it sounds like at first you guys, I mean, you felt like you were in love. You got away from your mom, which I'm sure was a relief if home was really hard. Yeah, to find this person that makes you feel better. When did things turn right away, or was there a moment later on when you were like, oh, this isn't normal, this isn't okay, I shouldn't be treated this way? Or do you feel like your self-esteem was always so low that you just, those red signs, like you said, you just didn't pick up on them ever?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of things. Just being inexperienced, I was very young and naive, and Marcel was very, very charming. He could be romantic at times, buy me roses, write poems, or sing songs to me. He made me feel very loved, something that was very different from when I was at home. So I felt really special. I hadn't experienced this type of love before from a person. So I was very forgiving when things would happen as well. I think that clouded my judgment. And also just having low self-esteem as well. If things happened, I was very embarrassed to talk about it if he was upset at me. So I didn't tell anyone. I think I started to see it more after we moved in together and I was living with him. We would face hardships. I started to see that he could not keep a job. He was very dishonest. He would get into arguments or fights with his managers, and next thing he's fired. He's not financially stable. Oftentimes he needs my help, even just for simple things as money for transportation or getting a haircut. And I felt like I was being drained emotionally. And then eventually physically as well. I think he, knowing my situation at home, that I wasn't very close with my mom or my brother, he was able to like manipulate that situation. And I fed into the lies that he was telling me, that this is true about you, or nobody wants you, or I just didn't do well with that. I believed what he was telling me. And when he was abusive, I didn't do anything about it. I didn't know that's wrong.
Right.
Never seen that at home. My mother was very, when she was upset, her punishment was a bit overboard. I remember when I was young, we had a sex ed in school, and they gave us samples of tampons, and I left them on my bed when I came back from school. I had nothing to hide. I didn't know what it was, but she was very upset when she saw them, and she grabbed me by my collar and she was choking me, because she believed that if you're using tampons, you had lost your virginity.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Why would she have thought that, do you think?
I think it's just cultural in Africa. There's just certain things that sex is very taboo. We don't talk about it. And yeah, just old, outdated beliefs.
Wow, and what a confusing thing for an American high schooler. I mean, that's so different. Yeah, wow. Do you think that there was a small part of you when Marcel started telling you these hurtful, untrue things about you? Was there a part of you that had believed those things long before you met him, and hearing him say them was like, oh yeah, I do think I'm worthless. I do think all these things he's saying about me, it's just that he's putting voice to these lies I've already believed about myself.
Yes, definitely. I think with my mom, because as children, we look up to our parents, but they're like our heroes, and I love my mom. But she would say really hurtful things, like if we did something wrong, or she just had a really stressful day at work, and it was taken out on us, and she would say very hurtful things, and I believe that because she's my mom.
That's the person you're supposed to be able to trust.
Yes.
Yeah. And then how devastating that when you left that situation and tried to find something safer, that's not at all what happened.
Yes. It's just the same. The same message.
And this all happened when you were 17, 18, 19, and I know now you're mid, late 20s. This isn't the kind of thing that you can close the book on. You know, you still deal with these sorts of feelings and memories. The ways that they hurt you, it doesn't just go away. I mean, I can feel that from you talking to you. I know you know the truth, but it doesn't mean that that hurt isn't sticking with you.
Yes.
Thanks for sharing.
Sure.
I want to ask you about something that I know brings you a lot of joy, even though it was really hard at the time. You got pregnant.
Yeah.
To start from the beginning of that, was that scary when you found out that you guys were expecting a baby?
Yeah, it was very scary. I didn't think we were ready. Oh, goodness. I just remember being at Planned Parenthood. I just missed my period, and I wasn't sure. I thought it was probably just high stress, because at the time, our living situation wasn't well. We were renting a room from a family, and I had discussions with Marcel before about us coming to a better place where we're financially stable. And because of my immigration situation, we came in as a G4 visa. There were certain things that resources that were not available to me because I wasn't a permanent resident or a citizen. And I just thought, well, I must have missed my period because I'm under a lot of stress. And then one day I decided on my way to work, I'll take this test. I went to CVS. I took a test. I actually took it in the bathroom there. That was positive. So I was really nervous. Went to Planned Parenthood. I was not sure what to do. They did the sonogram and I saw the heartbeat. And I was just like, this is real. I started thinking about being a parent, and I was also very nervous. Like, I can't provide for a child. We don't make enough money. We only live in a room. I don't want to bring her into this situation. I just was like really in love with her already, and I just wanted the best life for her, something different from the experience that I had growing up. And I spoke with Marcel about that, and he was just very stubborn about changing our life situation and seeking better. He was just stuck in his ways. He wasn't for it. But I continued to push forward. And, well, if you don't want to, I'm just going to move ahead without you. And I think he was intimidated by that. I was working hard, making more money than he was. I had ambition to go to school, and he didn't want me to go to college. And he started stealing money from me. Because I was a server, I would come home with cash, and I would just hide it in my clothes, and I would find money is missing. And that was the first time that he physically hit me when I was pregnant. I think I was in my third trimester for sure. And he punched me, and I was so heartbroken. Someone who I thought loved me and cared for me would never hurt me. And he hit me, and that just like made me feel like he doesn't care about me. I'm just a punching bag where he can take his emotions out on me physically. I was just really disappointed and scared. I actually left that night and slept at a friend's house. But I came back because I was thinking about Myra, my daughter, is my belly, that I wanted her to have two parents in her life. I grew up a single mom. I know she struggled a lot. And I wanted her to have a different experience than I did. So I went back. I gave him a second chance. He was very apologetic. He was very nice. It was like the honeymoon phase. And a few weeks later, I would just get back into the same habits. So it happened again. The second time is when I called the police because it was really scary. He had threatened me with a knife and he had hit me. He punched me in my face and I fell and I was bleeding. By this time, Myra was already born. She was in the crib when this happened. He took a pillow and he put a pillow over my face. And I couldn't breathe. I was suffocating. And I was like scratching at him, anything to get him off. I called the police as soon as he left. And I thought this was me escaping. This would, that, you know, growing up, I thought that if you need help, you would call the police. But it was so disappointing when I called out for help. The policeman said that it was a he said, she said story. He didn't know what to believe. Marcel said that I had scratched him, which is true. He was on top of me and I couldn't breathe. The natural thing would be try to get him off of me.
Self-defense.
Exactly. And he just didn't care. And I felt like I couldn't escape from the situation. If the police didn't believe me, nobody was going to help me. The only way I would leave this house is in a coffin. I would just die here. Nobody know what happened to me. I was just so disappointed. I fell into depression. I was very anxious. I would have dreams of being stuck in a prison. It was a woman's prison. And everywhere I walked in the hallways was just dead bodies. Some were hanging from trees. And I couldn't escape because there were like fences with barbed wire. And one day I climbed a tree to get on the other side. And I saw a security guard. And I ran up to him for help and told him what was going on. And I thought he would help me, but he just led me right back into that prison. And I realized that it was what was happening in my real life when I went to the police and called out for help.
What a powerful dream.
Yeah. I didn't know what it meant. And it happened again. He hit me maybe about 3 weeks later. And I called the police, and it was a female officer, and she was really nice. She listened. She was understanding. And she actually gave me resources to help me. She gave me a card for a domestic violence hotline. And I called them that very same night. And I was transferred to Artemis House, and we called a taxi to come pick us up. They grabbed a few belongings for me and my daughter, and we left. And that was the beginning of a new change. I never turned back, never saw Marcel after that. And things got better. Yeah.
What was that moment like when you got into the taxi? You left the home you'd been sharing with Marcel because you were married at the time, right? By this point, you had gotten married. What did that feel like, leaving your house?
It was amazing. It was like escaping. It was freedom. Freedom. Nobody's holding me back. I actually made it out. I felt so relieved.
I'm sure for the rest of your life, you'll never forget what that felt like.
Yes.
Yeah. Bree, your memories of this are so incredibly vivid. I feel like it just goes to show you don't get over this kind of stuff, right?
No, it stays there. Yeah.
Your word that you use when you just talk about the cop, the first cop that came and didn't do anything, you said you were disappointed. And I hear you say that, and my reaction is like, disappointed. That's such a gracious word. I mean, I hear that and I'm angry. I mean, I think you know this now. I know you've been told this, but just for another person to say to you, that's not okay that that happened. I don't hear something like that and brush it off. It's not the kind of thing we should brush off. You didn't deserve that. You were not given what you needed, what you deserved, by the person who was supposed to be able to give that to you.
Yes. Yes.
Tell us more about this moment where your life finally started to change. What was it like to be at that shelter?
It was great. Very normal. And I really appreciated that we also had services such as counseling for myself, which really helped to bring me up again because I was very broken. And my social worker just made me feel great, like just positive affirmation, words of encouragement, just positive messages. She would call me her rock star because I would take two buses and a train to get to work. I wake up at 4 a.m., drop my child off at daycare.
Oh my gosh.
Take two buses and a train to work, yes, and just do it all in reverse at night. And she's like, wow, you're such a rock star. You're amazing.
Yeah, that is an unheard of level of drive. Wow.
I didn't even think about it. I just had
you did what to, you
I was
needed
just
to
so
do.
Thankful. Exactly. And I wanted to use this opportunity to just drive forward. It was like this door had opened for me. I just saw light. It was a completely new life, and I felt safe not having Marcel there. Although he would call me at the time, he had my cell phone number and threaten me. But you know what? Those are just words. He has no idea where I live. I'm safe. I'm not telling him anything. It was just a new opportunity to create a different story.
And then you eventually got connected with Second Story, which was more of a longer-term safe place, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, it was amazing. I'm just so happy that there was such a program, a Second Story. It's just incredible. I met Angel. She was the first person to greet me, and she was so like happy and bubbly, just wonderful people. I've never had a support system behind me. People just come alongside me and they're supporting me. They want the best for me. Just incredible. And I really like that they had resources like diapers for your child. I didn't have to worry about childcare expense for diapers or any like household appliances. We were in a very safe place in a townhouse, just like in a cul-de-sac. I felt very safe there. It's a very quiet, secluded neighborhood. And it's close to the metro, so I can get to and from work very easily. The grocery stores within walking distance. There's just so much that I appreciate about that place. And they also had classes. Every Monday and Tuesday, we have classes where we learn either financial literacy or parenting skills. I know I really appreciated that each week we would get books for the children. So I learned to read to my child, which is very new because I had no background on how to raise a child. My mom was a workaholic. And I understand she's a single mom. She had to provide for us. So oftentimes she was not around. We had a nanny who took care of us. But just like taking a child to the park, or like reading to them at night, helping them grow, just nurturing them. I learned a lot of those skills from Second Story. And they helped me to save my money as well. With my income, 45% would go into an escrow account. And at the end of the term, then it would all be returned to me. And that helps me with my expenses when I moved to getting an apartment for just me and my child. We were more self-sufficient then. And I actually used the money that I saved to go to school. I took a six-month program for dental assisting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really great because that boosted my income, and I was able to work just Monday through Friday and be with my daughter on weekends and do fun stuff with her. So I really appreciated that they just provided this safety blanket, this net to fall on, and just helped me to get to the place that I wanted to be, which was never accessible because it was just not reachable for me to, in my past experience with making minimum wage. I never made enough to go to school. Right. I was living paycheck to paycheck. And in order to have a job that pays you more, you have to have education.
Yeah.
I was just stuck.
Right.
I had nowhere to go. So they really gave me an opportunity that I didn't have before. And I can say that today I'm just 14, 12 credits away from graduating from community college.
Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I have a 3.8 GPA.
Oh my gosh. It's fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, and I have to thank Second Story for helping me just balance life as a parent. You can do that. You can go to school. You can parent well and just manage your time wisely. I learned so much from them, how to be a mature adult. I have a 3.8 GPA. I went from having no credit at all to having excellent credit. I couldn't get a car. I couldn't get anything. Nobody would trust me with anything. But yeah, now I get these invitations to apply for more credit cards.
Is that satisfying to get one of those in the mail?
Yeah, they always go in the trash, though.
I know, but you get one and you realize you're doing something right.
Yes, they recognize me. I've made it.
Yeah, seriously. And tell me what you're majoring in.
I am majoring in business administration. And when I transfer to the University of Maryland, hopefully I make it into the Smith School of Business. I'd like to do management operations. Mm-hmm.
One thing also that stands out to me that you said is some of those skills that you learned just about being a parent. I feel like there's kind of this myth that parenting just comes naturally. And once you have a child, you have all these instincts. But I think we take for granted that parenting is a learned skill. You remember how your parents parented you and you reflect that. So in your case, if you had a parent who didn't treat you the way you deserve to be treated, fed you a lot of lies, didn't invest in you, how are you to know how you're supposed to be different?
Exactly. It's a cycle. Yeah, it could have been really bad if it wasn't for Second Story. I can't imagine where we would be today, what we'd be doing if I didn't have that opportunity. But I can speak to where we are now. Today, we have a house. Myra's doing really well in school. She's in a TAG program, which is Talented and Gifted Children.
Wow.
Yeah, she gets A's on her report card. People outside, she's very vibrant, very social. I was scared when I was living with Marcel, because some of the violence would take place and you would see that. In fact, when the first daycare I took her to, she was kicked out the first day. The lady said that Meyer was hitting other children in the face. And I was just so embarrassed because I knew where she's picking up these habits, where she gets that. Yeah.
And how different the environment you've created for her has allowed her to thrive.
Yes.
That's so beautiful.
Absolutely. Yes.
And you're doing incredible. And you just recently celebrated a wedding anniversary, right?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I did. It was our second year anniversary.
It's amazing. Tell me about your husband.
Oh, Brian is wonderful. He's just super loving, very understanding. And I feel safe that we can have disagreements, we can have conflict, and nobody's going to throw something at me or hit me. It's just wonderful.
So now on paper, your life is beautiful. You have a husband you love. You have a daughter who's gifted and talented. It's like an American dream. You have a second daughter now too, right?
Yes.
With Brian?
Yes.
It's amazing. You have the two kids. I mean, you're in school. If someone didn't know your story, that's everything a person could want. And yet I know these memories for you are still really painful. You remember them and I know they can feel nearby. How do you live with that tension between still struggling with the way you've been hurt and also now having what you'd always hoped for?
I think I just keep them. I just keep it down. I don't think about it. I only look forward at what I have now. And just, I'm so thankful for where we are today. I'm trying to make the best of it.
Right. So if there were someone listening who found themselves in the situation you were in, they're still stuck in an abusive relationship, or maybe there are warning signs that they're ignoring, what would you tell them? Or maybe what do you wish you could tell yourself?
I wish I could have told myself that it's not true. What people are saying, the people who are close to you, my mom or my boyfriend at the time, hurtful things that they're saying, aren't true about me. I am loved and I'm highly favored. Just remembering my value, my worth, and that people make mistakes, that there is something going on in their lives that is making them act that way, and they're just taking it out on me. It's not my fault. I have nothing to do with this. It's just completely on them. And to love myself, really fight for myself, because I was created. I have a purpose. I'm worthy.
And how beautiful now that those are the things you get to tell your daughter.
Yes.
You get to break that cycle.
Absolutely. I'm really excited for it, to watch them grow, see the wonderful women that they'll become. I'm just really thankful for the program, Second Story. They're doing amazing work, often goes unthanked. But the opportunity that they give to people to just better themselves, it's incredible. Also other organizations like Artemis House as well. It's just awesome to see that there are people who are just out there caring for others, who want to help people. And if they're listening, is all that their work, they may not know where the person ends up one day, but it's really helpful, that opportunity they give and just building people up. I'm really thankful for the counseling services I received when I was at Second Story. I was broken and bruised. They just nurtured me, and I'm just a completely different person. I'm the best version of myself today because of the resources I received out there.
That's amazing. And coming from a perspective of Second Story, I'm so thankful that you had the opportunity to access those resources and that support. But one of the really cool things about doing this podcast and getting to hear stories is that we can also say to someone like you, it's a real honor for people and organizations like us to get to be a part of your life. I mean, the resilience you have, the attitude you have, it's incredible. I think it's an honor to be able to provide those resources, but it's more an honor to just get to be a part of this kind of story.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm flattered, and I'm grateful for you all as well.
We're thankful for you. Thanks for sharing your story. Thanks for being vulnerable. I mean, I know it is hard to remember and reflect on these things, but I really believe it's valuable, you know, as we talk about some of these injustices that you experienced. We can't do anything unless we talk about them, and your story has value. It's beautiful. You're in an incredible place. I'm really thankful that you were willing to share.
Yeah, I'm hopeful and I'm thankful. I do hope that it's able to change someone's life out there, or just people receive the help that they need. Anything that my story can help with, I'm very happy to share, make a difference.
Yeah, I'm certain that it will. Thank you, Bree.
Thank you, Abigail.
Thanks for being willing to do this.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Second Stories. If you enjoyed this episode, we would be so thankful if you rated our podcast and left us a review. Be sure to also hit subscribe so you don't miss our next episode. Second Stories is created and produced by Second Story with support from our technical director, Franklin Vaughn. Second Story is a nonprofit based in Northern Virginia that works to provide safe havens and opportunities to grow and thrive to youth in crisis and their families. Learn more about what Second Story does and how you can support us at second-story.org. We hope you'll join us next time.